All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and Wildcard Wednesday requests. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about lost businesses that we miss in Chicago because we're about to welcome my guest to the show. His name is Greg Borzo, and he is the author of several books about the city, his latest being Lost Restaurants of Chicago. So we're going to start out talking about this book and about Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and then we're going to spread out and talk about bars and clubs and businesses and places that we used to like to go to that are no longer around. So we're going to reminisce a little bit. And, of course, the Academy Award nominations were announced yesterday. We're going to talk all about that, and we'll talk about the surprises and the snubs. And get to that as well. We got a Blackhawks Express to play, too. So 312-981-7200. And let's welcome author Greg Borzo to the show. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Let's get your background a little bit. Are you originally from Chicago?
Born in Chicago. Love the city. I studied journalism, so my training is really in journalism. And it's only in the last 10 years or so that I've branched off into books.
And you, what part of Chicago are you from?
Around the Ravenswood area.
Oh, okay. I grew up at Addison Ravenswood. I lived the greenhouse right next to the Brown Line stop. The Addison Brown Line stop is the house I grew up in.
So you have the L running in your veins.
I do, and at this current point, Greg, at this current point, I live right across the street from an L station as well. So
wow,
it's been a part. And you wrote a book about the L. I want to talk about that a little bit later on as well. What is it about that you love about this city, Greg? Because I'm born and raised here too, and this is the for me it's the best city, and I would never live anywhere else. What is it about the city that makes it so special, you think?
Well, the energy and the activity, there's so much to do, whether it's a sporting event or a book lecture or a museum exhibit or just the lakefront, now the Riverwalk. There's just so much to do. It's like a candy shop.
Yeah, it is. And the people who live here are pretty great, too. You got a big city here, but it's got the Midwestern feel to it,
Yeah, friendliness, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, you started writing books. What was the first book that you wrote, and what was the impetus to do that? I mean, you were a journalist. What was the first book that you wrote?
Well, I wrote the first one was the book about the L.
Uh-huh.
And the impetus was I took the L every day to get to work and back. And I was curious about everything I saw along the way. And so I started to research a little bit, what is that? Why are they doing this? And why do we have to wait, et cetera? And so I learned more, and I figured other people might be curious also about these facts. And I looked around, and there was no book about the L. Yeah, there was one that went all the way up to 1932.
Oh.
A great book. The author never did a second volume. Mm. And so I thought there might be a market, there might be a need, an interest for such a book.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And then you went out and you did it. We'll talk about some of your other books as well, but your latest is Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and you have an event happening tomorrow, Thursday the 24th. Book launch party. It's at Harold Washington Library, and you're going to have Doug Sohn there from Hot Dogs.
Yes. Doug wrote the foreword to my book, and when I contacted him initially, he was very enthusiastic about the idea. So I decided just to do everything possible with him. He's a great guy, very interesting and very knowledgeable. So he'll be at the book launch as well, talking about his restaurant, Hot Doug's, and probably telling a few jokes, as Doug will do.
Yeah, I've had Doug on the show. I've had Doug on the show several times. He's a great guy, and I've been to Hot Dogs many times.
I bet you miss it.
I do miss it. I miss it terribly. But I used to go back when it was on Roscoe. I would go to back in that first location before he moved over to California.
The original.
So, and the whole thing starts at 6 p.m. at the Harold Washington Library. Hot Dog, Doug Sohn is going to be there. You're going to be there. And there's a free raffle with over $1,000 in prizes. That's also happening at this event tomorrow night, the book party launch.
That's right. And the raffle prizes, again, are free. They involve travel, tours, food, books, photos, et cetera. Eli's Cheesecakes. If you want, if you love Eli's Cheesecakes, we got a $100 gift certificate for you.
Wow. All right.
Donated by that company. So we have a variety of prizes and a good chance of winning. Better odds than you get with the lottery. Mm.
All right. That's great. Sounds great. Well, let's talk about the book, Greg. The idea for the book, Lost Restaurants of Chicago, you know, we like to reminisce here on the show. Like I said, later on, after we talk to you, I'm going to open up the phone lines and we're going to talk about bars and clubs that have closed and other businesses and things like that, because we miss a lot of these places and there's an emotional attachment to it. So what was it about the Lost Restaurants? Was there a certain thing that did a restaurant close down and you said, man, we need to write about that. I need to write about this?
Actually, it was more just from conversing with people, just sitting around talking. It just kept coming up. People would mention a restaurant that they liked and that they missed. For example, I give tours of the L for the Chicago History Museum.
Okay.
And part of the tour is to ride around the loop, on the loop elevated. And more than half a dozen times on different tours, we would go past a restaurant called the Plymouth Rooftop Bar and Grill. And more than half a dozen times, somebody would say, oh, that restaurant used to be called Binion's, and they had the best turtle soup.
That's right.
The best turtle soup. You know, where does that come from?
Yeah.
And so things like that, little comments like that, conversation sparked my interest in Lost Restaurants.
Well, you know, I mean, we've got such a great history with food in this city and restaurants that it's you know, it's obviously a great idea for a book. And I just want to mention before we jump into the book and go into the specifics of the book, my neighborhood just lost a restaurant at the beginning of the year, the great Sabatino's, the Italian restaurant on Irving Park. I live very, very near there. I was sad to see that place close down. It was great. It was old school, family run. I just thought I loved that place.
Good food and good prices. It will be sorely missed.
Yeah, no question about it.
All
right, so let's talk a little bit about the structure of the book. How did you structure it chapter wise and things like that?
Well, there's a chapter on the early days of restaurants in Chicago, back when women were not allowed in most restaurants. Some of, you know, how restaurants got started. They were rough and tumble kind of taverns to begin with. There's a chapter on the hotel restaurants, because hotel restaurants really kicked it up a notch for Chicago. I've got a chapter on ethnic restaurants, so important to the fabric of the city.
Yeah.
Another chapter on steakhouses, because that's pretty, you know, central.
Yeah.
Beefsteak in Chicago. Soul food restaurants merited a chapter. Pretty much, you know, by topic like that. And then finally a chapter on diners and delis and dogs.
Yeah.
So some of the not, you know, white tablecloth restaurants, but some great ones nevertheless. Not only hot dogs, but Felony Frank's.
Yeah.
Another hot dog restaurant that was employing expellents and putting it right front and center in their name and with all of their food offerings.
Well, we're a great hot dog town. There's no question about it. We're great. But I will say this, in looking at the materials for your book, I did not know until I was reading a part of your book that Wan Khao closed down. I didn't know that, and that was my go-to restaurant in China. I haven't been there in a few years, but that was my go-to restaurant. Anytime we would go to Chinatown, that's where we'd go. Tell us about that restaurant.
Well, that was the longest-running Chinese-American restaurant in Chicago, and it closed in 2017, and they just ran out of steam. Often one generation will take over for another and then another, but eventually no one in the family, no one in the business wanted to keep that going. It's a lot of work to run a restaurant, you're talking some really long hours.
Yeah.
And so we were sorry to see that one close.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to go up to, I believe it's on Irving Park, the what's it called?
Orange Garden.
Orange Garden,
yeah,
is now the longest running Chinese restaurant in Chicago. Now that Wan Khao is closed,
I grew up at Irving and Ravenswood. That was our go-to.
Mm-hmm.
That was our go-to Chinese restaurant, Orange Garden. It's still there. The facade looks exactly the same. The inside of the restaurant looks exactly the same. It has the same feel that it did when we would go there like 40 years ago.
Yes. But some people, not you, but others, might take it for granted, and all of a sudden it'll be a close sign. So my thought in all of this is patronize today's restaurants so that they're not lost restaurants tomorrow.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good
idea. You could say eat out early and often, the Chicago way.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Greg, I want to talk about more of the lost restaurants of Chicago, and I know that you probably have some really interesting stories about why some of these places closed and how long they operated and then the family stories, and I want to get into all of that. The book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and again, tomorrow, Thursday evening, January 24th at the Harold Washington Library. It's from 6 to 7:15. We're going to talk about that. They're going to talk about the book, The Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and Greg Borzo is going to be there, and Doug Sohn having a conversation. And there's going to be a lot of raffles and over $1,000 in prizes.
So. And also a lot of images. Both Doug and I will be running a PowerPoint with a lot of images, so over 100 images of different restaurants. So it won't just be two talking heads. We'll have plenty of scenes and people. And inside and outside of restaurants to jog all of your memories.
Great. Okay. All right. We'll talk more. Hang on, Greg. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Greg Borzo is with us, author of Lost Restaurants of Chicago. He's written a bunch of books about Chicago, and we'll talk to him more right after we take this break for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You can get your requests in now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about lost bars, clubs, and businesses of Chicago that we miss, that we used to go to all the time. They're not around anymore, and we miss them. And we're also going to cover the Oscar snubs. I'll go through the nominations and talk about that as well. The book that we're talking about now is Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg Borzo is the author. He's written several books about the city. This is the latest one, and it's about restaurants that have closed down and reminiscing about them and talking about their history and all that really cool stuff. And again, tomorrow night, Thursday, January 24th, he's going to be hosting a book launch party at Harold Washington Library, 400 South State Street. Starts at 6 p.m. Doug Sohn from Hot Doug's is going to be there. There's going to be a PowerPoint presentation with images of these great restaurants, and they're going to talk about all the history of these great restaurants, and there's going to be a free raffle with over $1,000 in prizes. And for more information, you can check out our Facebook page, but also gregborzo.com. That's B-O-R-Z-O. And let's welcome Greg back to the show. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about some of your favorite stories in the book. Because I know a lot of these restaurants that you talk about had a rich history. What were some of the more surprising or some of the more interesting stories that you got while researching this about these restaurants?
Oh, there are just so many. I think maybe one that jumps off the page is Flo's. It's a restaurant that used to have a young lady in a scantily clad outfit swinging back and forth on a trapeze in front of the restaurant.
Mm.
This was to attract people in. And it was on Randolph, at the corner of Randolph and Madison,
yep,
right downtown.
Yep.
And so Flo's, that's not very PC. It might not go over well today, but it might have brought in customers to that restaurant. There's just so many. The Black Hawk, of course, became famous for big band music. Not only the great food they were serving, but it was broadcast on, in fact, WGN across the country. The music playing in that restaurant while people were dancing that music was broadcast around the country, and it got to be so popular that WGN installed a ticker tape in the restaurant so that the bands playing there could take requests.
Wow.
So, I mean, talk about a big night on the town. Mm. You'd go out and have a great dinner, and you'd dance, and you'd be a part of that at the Black Hawk. So, you know, there's just so many restaurants. The Schaller's on South Halsted opened 136 years.
Wow.
Basically as a neighborhood restaurant, tavern, community center, gathering place down there in Bridgeport. That's just phenomenal. The people, think about how many meals and beers and greetings occurred in that restaurant over 136 years.
It's amazing the history of that restaurant. You touch upon that, and one of the reasons why it closed is because that 92-year-old Jack Schaller lived upstairs. He died in 2016, and the tavern lost its tax exemption that was grandfathered into it to the owner. So that's one of the reasons why it closed.
That was a factor. Uh-huh.
And it hosted all three Chicago White Sox World Series wins.
Isn't that something?
And the World's Columbian Exposition of 1893. I mean, this is really, I mean, the history of this place is incredible.
You're talking old.
You know, you mentioned that a lot of the restaurants in Chicago started out as taverns. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I guess Chicago was a rough town. They were not known for fine restaurants. It was a town with a lot of people traveling through, being on the river and lake. And so taverns also appeal to ethnic groups. And so your Germans had their style of tavern. Other ethnic groups, Irish and Italian or whoever, had different styles of restaurants and bars and taverns for gathering people. So that's just part of probably a big part of our ethnic background.
Mm-hmm. Is that they started out as taverns. And a lot of these taverns would serve food, but it just kept getting bigger and bigger, and the meals got better. It was, you know, it was just sort of like tavern food at first, but then things started to change, and the restaurant started to serve great foods.
Some of them, yes, morphed into fine restaurants. In many cases, the food was free to begin with to get people in to drink, and eventually they would kick it up a notch. Shulian's started as a tavern, ended up being a world famous restaurant for magic shows.
Mm.
Shulian's also on Irving Park. It created something called Chicago Magic, which was tableside or close up magic. So the magician would come right to your table and do their tricks, and even though you're sitting right in front of them, you could not catch what they were doing.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a real
great place.
Yeah, and so some of the other and many of these restaurants that you featured, these lost restaurants that you featured, a lot of these were family owned and run by families for many years. Correct.
Yes. Uh huh. The Monasteros had a family heritage. And that one closed because a church came along and said, we'd like to build a church right where your restaurant and parking lot is.
Right.
So could we please buy your property?
Yeah.
And that was the Romanian Pentecostal church. And I guess they made such a good offer that Monasteros up there on Devon near Pulaski sold and closed.
Mm. Yeah, and that was another great restaurant. Yeah. That place was great. It had a lot of. It was a beautiful looking restaurant too.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that
very,
offer,
very
I guess,
elegant,
beautiful looking. And I guess that the offer must have been pretty great then.
Speaking of families, since the book has come out, I've heard so many additional stories. I could write another book just about people's reactions to the book and the restaurants in the book. For example, one. A gal emailed me and said, you know, you saved our Christmas because we used to sit around every year and just fight. But this year we looked through your book and we remembered all these fun restaurants we had been to and we had a great time.
So that's great. And the feedback. So the feedback's been really good. Let's mention another one that was in the South Loop. That was Blackie's, which was at Polk and Clark.
Yeah.
That was a big time restaurant for stars, right? The Rat Pack, the Three Stooges, the Marx Brothers, Lena Horne. They would all hang out at this place, Blackie's. Talk a little bit about that place.
They would not only hang out there, but I've heard stories of food fights and crazy parties at Blackie's. Of course, all bars and restaurants had to close at some hour, be it midnight or 2 or 4. But when Blackie's was supposed to close, they simply locked the door and pulled the curtain over the windows, and they continued to party. So it was really party central for the stars, probably mostly because of its close location to the train station there at Dearborn and Polk. That station had direct lines from California, so people jumping off the train from Hollywood, maybe staying over to catch a train the next day to New York, or coming into town to give a show, would head to Blackie's for a meal and some drinks and relaxation. So that was a pretty fun place. And that was another one run by a family, several generations of a family, and eventually they just ran out of steam.
Yeah,
no one in the family wanted to continue the business.
That was the same. That seems to be kind of a common thread here about that, because I mean that's what happened with Sabatino's. They didn't want to continue to run the business because it's hard. You know, like you mentioned, it's really really hard to run a restaurant, and it takes a lot of time.
Yes, but absolutely.
Blackie's,
so that was very common.
Blackie's lasted until 2017, though. That's a great run.
Yes. Oh yes.
I'll tell you the one that I miss terribly is a legendary place in Lincoln Square, Chicago Brauhaus, which is one of my favorite restaurants. Was one of my favorite restaurants in the city. I spent a significant amount of time hanging out in Lincoln Square, and I had been there millions of times. The food was great. The atmosphere was amazing. It was like a party when you went to that place.
Another one, they closed in 2017, and it was a party. Live music, dancing. Sometimes people would make a parade right out the door into the Lincoln Square area, up and down the street, back into the restaurant. Lively foot stomping, ompa music.
Yeah.
A great loss. We've lost so many German restaurants. Chicago is such a strong German heritage, but many of them have closed over the years, and there's only a few left.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, because that was a very just distinctive, and the food at that place was just fantastic at the Chicago Brauhaus, and it was a staple in that neighborhood, and it was a very at one time, Lincoln Square was a major German neighborhood with businesses.
Absolutely.
And it still has that kind of feel to it now, but not nearly as much as it did like when I was a kid.
Sure, there used to be Meyer's Deli. Yep. and other German restaurants and businesses there. Yeah.
And they did in fact rename the square in front of the restaurant into Kempf Plaza after the owners, the brothers.
That's right. What a nice touch.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Really, really great. Okay. Greg, hang on, okay?
Will do.
Okay. Greg Borzo is with us, author of Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Terrific book about, we're reminiscing about some of these restaurants. And then we're going to talk about businesses and other places that we remember that don't exist anymore. Rich history of businesses and bars and clubs and restaurants in this city. And we're going to talk all about that. And again, tomorrow, Thursday, January 24th, they're hosting a book launch party. And Doug Sohn is going to be there with Greg. And they're going to be giving away some stuff in raffles. And there's going to be a PowerPoint presentation with images of these great restaurants and the history of these restaurants. And the book will be available as well. It's Lost Restaurants of Chicago. All right, we're going to come back and talk more with Greg after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up at 6 is your morning drive with Steve Cochran. Also coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. My guest right now is Greg Borzo, author of several books about this city, the latest being Lost Restaurants of Chicago. There's an event tomorrow that you should check out. Starts at 6 p.m. at the Harold Washington Library, which is 400 South State Street. And it's tomorrow, the 24th. It's a book launch party, and Doug Sohn is going to be there as well. And you can pick up a copy of the book that we've been talking about, Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you.
You also talk about the menus, you know, the actual menus that you would get at these restaurants, and some of them were so unique and original and felt so different when you look at them. What were some of the stories there?
Well, many of them are literally pieces of art, beautifully designed and laid out, depicting just a mood, a style, whether it be elegance or craziness and fun, everything from, you know, your R.J. Grunt's style of menu, which is very chaotic and fun, to something like the Empire Room at the Palmer House. So I was able to learn a lot from these menus. The Chicago History Museum has a great collection of old menus, and so you can glean all kinds of information from them. One old one from the New York restaurant on State Street here in Chicago put on its menu, "No scraps are taken off the floor and reserved at this restaurant." So that tells you that what's going on in some other ones.
That's fantastic. That is great. I also love that you mentioned that the Hyde Park restaurant, the House of Tiki's menu, I love this. It had layer after layer of stickers because when the prices increased, they didn't make a new menu. They just put stickers with the price increase on it. I've seen that at other restaurants as well. That's crazy.
Yeah. That place also had a sign in the window saying homemade jello. So, you know, you never know what you're going to run into at some of these places. And reading the menu from Cafe Bohemia was quite a trip. That's a place that was famous for game. And so not just pheasant and quail, but lion, rhinoceros, rattlesnake, elk, et cetera, alligator. And so Cafe Bohemia, close to Union Station, used to draw in tourists. Wow. For those exotic meats.
And I'm looking at, it also says that the African lion with a Grand Marnier sauce was $16 back in 1979. And it also must be fun to look back at the prices when you're looking at these old menus. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at this at BG Foods in 1944, a triple decker sandwich was 30 cents.
Yep. So that would explain why somebody told me after the book came out a funny story about BG Foods.
Okay.
Again, a low-cost sandwich shop, really a small chain. And so this woman said to me, you know, it was great to see that picture of BG Foods in your book because that's where my dad proposed to my mom.
Aww.
But she was so disappointed that she made him redo it again at a better restaurant.
That's great. I bet that, and the book is probably filled with great stories like that. It's Lost Restaurants of Chicago, a great idea for a book, and we love talking about the history of Chicago and places that we used to love, and we're going to continue talking about it in a little bit, but let's talk about your first book, The Chicago L. How did you research it, and how did you write it, and what does the book really highlight?
Well, I researched it by writing the L myself, but then to get the history and the stories involved, you hit newspapers and corporate reports, business reports, company reports about the building of the L and the running of the L. And also I learned a lot from the community in Chicago of train fans. They are so knowledgeable, they're so dedicated, they're so interesting, and they're so helpful. I learned a lot from going to train fan meetings and from talking to people who are so knowledgeable. They could look at a picture and say, oh, That's got that blue and white sign on the left side. That means it's 1922.
Right.
Because they knew the signage, they knew the equipment, they knew which side of the tracks the trains were operating on year by year by year. And so a lot of it came from fellow train fans. Many of the pictures came from the CTA. Mm-hmm. CTA has a great photo archive. And I just loved working on the book, and it's been well received. I learned so much about it that it makes me love to ride the L more than I ever have.
Yeah.
And it's funny, sometimes I see a tourist looking at the map and trying to figure out where to go, and I'll give them some directions, and then sometimes they'll look at me and they say, "Are you sure?" And I say, "Well, yeah. I am sure."
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, I told you where I grew up, Greg. I mean, right next to an L station. The people on the people on the platform could actually look into my bedroom window. I'm not, and that's how.
Oh, boy.
But it was.
Well, that reminds me of a story that I heard, and that was that someone along the Ravenswood line, might have been you, used to put a mannequin in the window of a scantily clad woman. Just to watch the reaction of the people on the train when it went by.
I wish I would have thought of that. I wish I would have thought of that. But the thing is, you know, like the train, you know, unless it was an express or a B train. Remember those days, the A and B, A and B trains. It would always stop. It would never go past my window. So there would be a perfect time for people to look in and see a scantily. I should have thought.
Oh, I can't believe I should have thought of that. other people put signs like "Happy Birthday, Joe" and things like that because they knew somebody was coming by that day.
Oh yeah.
Especially the Brown Line, the Ravenswood Line, very friendly neighborhood kind of line. That's my favorite line.
Me too. It's my favorite. You know why it's my favorite line, Greg? Because you get
why
you get all. You know, you start out at Lawrence. You start out at street level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you go up, and then you get, and then it becomes a subway too. At some point, it turns back around. No, it doesn't become a subway, but it starts at street level,
It's like a tour.
Yeah.
It's like a tour, an elevated tour, because most of it's elevated all the way around the loop.
You know, it's interesting because you know this is a true story. When I was living up in Albany Park, about four blocks away from the Wilson Lawrence and Wilson stop. When I was going through any kind of like sort of anxiety or depression, I would just get on the L and ride it from Lawrence all the way around back to Lawrence again, just to just to sit on the train and maybe think about things. And it was very relaxing for me, you know. So
you've got it bad.
Yeah, I do. So
I know the feeling though.
Yeah.
And not only a way to relax, but I've often connected with people.
Yes.
On the L in just a casual, friendly way. You see somebody two or three times during a week,
yep,
and you'd strike up a little conversation. And, boy, I ended up in a book club that way.
Oh, there you go.
Noticing what people were reading, and then they invited me into their book club and stuff. So it's a community space. It's a shared space. It's not a private automobile where you're by yourself.
Right, you're right.
And I like that aspect of the L.
Yeah. Well, the book is called The Chicago L. It's available, and the latest book is Lost Restaurants of Chicago. And again, tomorrow, the 24th, a book launch party at Harold Washington Library starting at 6 p.m. Greg, real pleasure talking to you, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, same here. I hope to come back and have another chat someday. This has been so much fun.
Great. I'm glad you had a good time. Have a good morning, okay? Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, Greg Borzo, everybody. The latest book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. We'll take a break for the news, and when we come back, we're going to jump into bars and clubs and other businesses that we miss that are no longer around. So we're going to reminisce about lost businesses of Chicago. We love to do that here on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'll be back after the news after this.